Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
They always tell us that, well, he probably left on his own accord, but we as his family know that that's not what happened. We have not had anything in almost 12 years. We actually had no help from the police either. He was assigned to a police officer, and I believe that police officer had him for, I want to say, about 8 years, and he never investigated his case. Between my parents and myself, and a few of my friends, were actually the ones that went down. We searched the area, you know, we put up the flyers and different stuff like that. We talked to different places where he would hang out. He loved being a builder. He is a father of two children. He loved to ride motorcycles and played golf. Sorry, it's hard to talk about.
Hello, and welcome to episode 47 of The Vanished. 25-year-old Bradley Ross was reportedly last seen in Fort Wayne, Indiana on November 19, 2004. Brad was supposed to pick up his fiancée from work on the evening of the 19th after she finished her second shift job, but the vehicle that he was driving was involved in an accident. It is not known whether or not Brad was the one driving the car. A witness observed the driver running away from the scene, and no trace of Brad has ever been found. This is Brad's story. Before we get started with this story, I wanted to tell you something exciting. You guys know that I'm always trying to improve the show, whether it be by improving the audio quality or delving deeper into each story. There is only so much that I, as one person, can do and continue to bring you a new story every week. As you know, the people that I've been covering are not the people that you will find a whole lot of information on when you do an internet search. Usually there will be just a few sentences about where they were last seen and what they look like. In order to bring you more information, I've been reaching out to people who were close to each story. This takes a lot of time to do. I decided to bring someone on to help me with the show. His name is Nathan, and he has been a journalist for over 15 years. I have him spending a lot of time tracking people down and making phone calls. He is very persistent, and you'll hear a little from him later on in this show. One interesting aspect of Brad's case is that the information that is out there is a version of the story that was told by someone very close to the case. Most people who knew Brad believe that she knows more about what happened to him. When I sat down to figure out the flow of this episode, it dawned on me that we needed to throw the whole story out and start fresh. We needed to confirm the facts, or at least show that her story had not been checked out. I would like to thank several people who spoke with us for this episode. You will hear from Brad's sister, Crystal, Detective Carrie Young, and Patrick, who was the other driver in the accident on November 19, 2004. Brad was born and raised in Michigan, but in 2004, he and his fiancée decided to look for greener pastures as she was pregnant at the time.
He actually had just moved down to Fort Wayne about 3 to 4 months prior. He had taken a job down there and was trying to get his life straightened around, trying to do good for his kids. It's very hard. And his son doesn't understand. He wasn't born yet. She was still pregnant. His daughter, she would have been about 7, and she turns 19 on Monday.
On November 19th, Brad reportedly dropped his fiancée Sarah off at work around 2 p.m. and was supposed to pick her up at 10 p.m., but he never arrived.
From the police report, we were told that he had borrowed his fiancée's car and he was on his way to pick her up from work. He should have been going straight through the light, and he was making a left-hand turn, which is where the accident came into play.
Sarah's 2004 Dodge Stratus careened left into a car driven by Patrick High, whose memory of the crash is quite foggy.
All I know is that someone hit us. They got out and ran away. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know anything else about it beyond that.
You got to the accident that night. Were the cops called about the accident?
Yeah, the police were there.
Okay. But after that, they never came back and asked you any information about?
No.
No? Huh.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry I don't have any more information. I've had a couple people ask me on Facebook if I knew anything about it, and I really don't. We were hit pretty much, you know, what the police report says. We were turning, car ran the red light, hit us. After we came to a stop, the person got out of the car, ran away, and there were a bunch of, beer cans in the car.
Okay.
That's all I know, man.
Man, that's crazy. But nobody was injured, right?
I mean, I went to the hospital. I wasn't seriously injured. I ended up having, some bruised ribs and really bad whiplash, a concussion, but nothing where I had to, stay overnight or anything.
But you see the guy running, you're like, what the hell?
Yeah, I didn't even see the guy running.
Really?
The other guy in the car did. And he's like, hey, he's running. I'm like, God, I have no clue what's going on, so yeah, okay.
All right, man. Well, you take care of yourself.
You as well.
For Bradley's family, it was another dead end.
Whoever was driving, whether it was him or not, nobody really knows. But whoever was in the car had taken off running. And that's pretty much all we know. He never showed up to pick her up, and he's never been seen or heard from since.
Police notified Sarah that her car had been in an accident, and she went to get it from the impound lot. Without much to go on, Crystal and some friends went to talk to the detective.
He refused to even see us. Wouldn't even let us in the building. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
They had gone to state what seemed obvious to everyone but the police.
I honestly think his fiance knows what happened. That is my honest-to-God opinion, and pretty much everybody else thinks so, too.
Nearly 12 years after Brad had gone missing, his family received some bittersweet news.
About 3 or 4 months ago, my parents got a call that this new detective was taking over the case. That his case had been closed for 2 years, which we never knew. So now we have a new detective that is actually trying to do something, trying to help us out.
While researching this story, I had one of those light bulb moments. Sarah told Brad's family a story about his disappearance, and that has never been checked out. The only facts that we know are that the accident did happen and that Brad is gone. Sarah claims to be the last person to see him alive, when he supposedly dropped her off at work. Brad was working for a roofing company at the time, and it seems logical that he would have been at work at 2 p.m. that Friday. No one ever checked out his employment records. We don't even know if he worked that day. No one checked to see if he had worked in the days leading up to the 19th. Her story that she was at work at 2 p.m. has not been checked either. The last time that we have any information to confirm that Brad was alive and well was his phone call to Crystal a few days before. The Stratus was never searched. Brad's residence was never searched. All of a sudden, I had so many questions for law enforcement. I had Nathan call Detective Carrie Young from the Fort Wayne Police Department. Remember, he has only had the case for a few months, so if the lack of investigation makes you want to scream, please don't blame Detective Young. He is the first detective to show any interest in finding Brad.
The first person and missing that had the first detective that had it, his first entry was on January 19th of 2005, and he advised that he took a missing report from Brad Sr., reference Brad Jr., and he had not been seen or heard from since November 19th. And then it says that he was Brad Jr.'s only involvement was a suspect in a hit-skip accident on 11/19/2004. And then they did the computer checks through the years. They checked with, at one time, there was supposedly, let me get down to it. There was a guy that called in that said he thought he had seen Bradley Jr. downtown, and they followed up on that. And it turned out there was a guy that worked at the place they were talking about that looked similar to Bradley, but the supervisor there said he'd never seen Bradley before. So that's pretty much all that was done on our end of the investigation. And then when I got the case, I made contact with Mom and Dad, and they gave me Sarah's current information, and then I tried to get in contact with Sarah, and she didn't return calls to me. I have done all of our computer checks, you know, through Social Security and all that stuff, and there's been absolutely no activity on him. And actually, like, the clear report came back with what looked like good stuff, but it turns out that's all Bradley Sr. stuff. And then the TLO, it has absolutely nothing on Bradley Jr.
Detectives didn't even have the couple's address. Missing persons info online didn't come from the police, it came from Sarah. In fact, police had treated Brad more as a fugitive than a missing person.
It sounds like whoever was working that and the detective on this case never made that connection.
The detective that had it initially said that Bradley's last involvement, so he got this from somewhere else, because that's not in our system about him even being a suspect in a hit-and-run accident.
Okay.
His only involvement in our local system is being reported as a missing person on January 19th of 2005.
Because Crystal has a copy of that accident report, so there's got to be a report from that accident.
Okay, somehow it didn't get associated with Bradley's name.
That night, Bradley was supposed to pick up Sarah. Her 2004 Dodge Stratus hit Patrick High. Police assumed Bradley was the male seen running from the accident. When police notified Sarah that her car had been in an accident, she said that her roommate had either stolen or borrowed the vehicle. But the only roommate she had was Bradley. When Brad's father reported him missing in January, police suspected that he might be trying to evade capture on two warrants that he had for misdemeanor offenses in Michigan, as well as child support.
We as his family know that that's not what happened.
I mean, as a detective, you're looking at this, you know, what's kind of going through your head?
Well, I'd like to talk to Sarah. I mean, that would be where I'd want to start.
Yeah, because he's just gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a good contact number for her, and actually the voicemail even says that it's Sarah.
Oh, okay, so she's there. She's not answering.
Yeah, yep.
She's still in town there? Or?
No, she's in Michigan.
Okay.
Let's see, I got to get back to a different screen.
If the man driving Sarah's car that night wasn't Brad, then who was it? Why did he have it? And where was Brad? Nathan raised a disturbing prospect to Detective Young.
So what happened to the car? I mean, was there any possibility there was a body in the car? I mean, did they...
That's what I don't know, because I don't have...
Place
of I've got real limited information. I mean, you've got a lot more information than what I do on this. I can tell you that. But if I get... the accident report number, I can get that report pulled and see what they actually did with it. They might not even, I mean, I would have thought that they would have towed the car, but they might not have if there wasn't that much damage.
Police did have the car towed, but it was never searched. His fiance was able to just go pick it up from the lot that it had been towed to.
Because then she said, you know, he was supposed to pick her up and then there was an accident. And that he was last seen on, you know, in the vicinity of Old Maumee Road. I mean, that was sort of, I guess, what everyone's kind of been working off of. But when we were thinking about it today, we were like, you know, if she did have something to do with this, and he didn't show up for work that day, I mean, there's a good chance that he hadn't been seen for a day or two, because his sister hadn't spoken with him for, I think, 3 days. Or they had spoken with him, like, 3 days earlier. And couldn't get a hold of him, but I wasn't under the impression that Sarah called her worried about where Bradley was. It kind of seemed like the other way around.
Yeah. So is there any way to get a copy of everything you got so I've got more to follow up on? What address did you have them living at? Did you get that? Because I don't even have that.
I just know they lived on Old Maumee Road.
Okay. I've tried to get a hold of the fiance and can't get in contact with her.
Despite his family's sense that police had not done anything with the case, Detective Young pointed out that several leads did come in over the years, and that the police had, in fact, followed up on them. These tips ranged from a couple false sightings to rumors of Brad's infidelities, but none of those leads ever panned out.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished.
I would like to move on to theories. There are so many possibilities since we do not even have a timeline that we can count on. We know that he spoke to Crystal a few days before the accident, and everything else is questionable. Nathan and I have been working with Brad's employer to see if they have records from 2004 or if anyone remembers when he last reported to work. They are looking into it, but at the time of this recording, they have not gotten the information back to us. I will keep you updated if we can establish that. Brad was a roofer and should have been at work that day. Most roofers are working at 2 p.m., but we don't know if maybe he left early or took off that day. One aspect of this that changes the whole story is whether or not Brad was the driver of the vehicle. That is the mystery within the mystery. If he was the driver, did he run off because he didn't have his license? We know from the other driver in the accident that there were beer cans at the scene. Did he run off to avoid a DUI? It is very plausible to me that someone would run off from the scene of an accident if they were concerned about charges related to drinking and driving. People do it all the time, but they usually turn up eventually. This does not sound like a planned event to walk away and start a new life. One thing that I don't understand is why the police did not look for the driver that night. Was there something else going on that they needed to get to that was more pressing? We just don't know. Also, why did they not investigate the accident further? Leaving the scene of an accident is a crime itself. Crystal does not think that he would have just walked away and never come back.
He wasn't perfect, I mean, you know, but he would have called one of us and said, okay, you know, I can't come back, you know. He would have said something to somebody. He wouldn't have just disappeared and, you know, never called my mom. He was very close to my mom. Him and I were very, very close. So it's really, really hard for me to believe that he would have just up and disappeared and never said anything to anybody.
Crystal told me about one theory that her family has considered over the years.
So we aren't sure if maybe he had stopped at the store before or stopped somewhere before that and maybe got carjacked and then somebody else, you know, got into the accident trying to, you know, drive away from him, or there's a million possibilities. They've run through our minds for the last 12 years.
I have considered this myself. What if he did drop his fiance off and then something happened between 2 and 10 p.m.? We have no evidence to establish where he may have been during this time. Could he have been the victim of some other crime and then someone stole the vehicle and drove it around drinking beer? If so, where is Brad? The Department of Justice estimates that between 21 and 27% of homicides are committed by strangers, and between 73 and 79% are committed by someone known to the victim. Many people who knew Brad feel like his fiance knows more about what happened. Crystal explained to me why she thinks this.
There's a million little reasons, but I think my biggest one was she had never tried to help find him. She never had called the hospitals or the morgues or the cops. She wasn't even the one to make the missing person report. And then it was about maybe 2 weeks that she had moved back to Michigan after he disappeared, just packed up everything and left. And then she had had my nephew, and about, I think he was about a month or 2 months old, I had went to visit. And I don't remember the exact conversation, but her reply I will never forget. She says, "I will just wait the 7 years and declare him dead so I can collect Social Security on my son." They have tried a few times to question her, and she's refused. I actually had a chance to go on the Dr. Phil show, and she refused. She will not do absolutely anything to help us find him at all. Well, in the police report, it actually says, too, that she told the cops when they had come to speak with her about the car, that she told them it was her roommate that borrowed her car. She did not say it was her fiancé that was coming to pick her up from work. Since I seen that police report, it never made any sense to me. Like, was she saying that because she thought, well, oh my gosh, my car has been in an accident, but who comes up with that off the top of their head? I mean, so unless she knew what was going to happen, she could have had her story ready saying, okay, yeah, well, my roommate borrowed it. Because at that time, my brother didn't have a license, so he wouldn't have been insured. So she had to have known something in order to tell the cops this big elaborate story that her roommate stole it or took it or whatever. She didn't care. She had no emotion whatsoever. I called her every day to see if she had, you know, picked up the phone book and said, you know, hey, I called this person and this person or the hospital. Nothing. She never called any friends, any family, nobody. It was, I don't know if it was that night or the next morning that she called my parents and told them, but that was it. She didn't care. She never went any farther than calling my parents.
We know that there are rumors that both Brad and Sarah were having affairs. I can't prove to you that this is true or untrue. We do know that Sarah moved on rather quickly after Brad's disappearance. Why did she refer to him as her roommate and not fiancé or boyfriend? Could she have been involved with someone who wanted him out of the way? Did Brad find out about an affair and decided to confront the other man? If so, did that get out of hand? Could he have come home from work early and walked in on something? One other important thing to point out is that Brad had a strained relationship with Sarah's family and had told others that her father had threatened him in the past. Could someone in her family have had motivation to get him out of the way before the baby was born? To circle back to the car for a moment, there's one thing that Nathan pointed out to me and also Detective Young in the interview. Why would the person have run from the accident? And a lot of people run from accidents to avoid DUI or DWI charges, but the car was still drivable. Why would you not drive it off instead? You would get so much farther than on foot, even if you ditched it further down the road and then took off running. It would still be harder to find the person. Was this just a split-second decision, or was there some evidence in the car that the driver did not want to be associated with? The car was never searched. Could there have been a body in the trunk? Did someone get really lucky that the police did not search the car? There may be no evidence left in the vehicle, but Detective Young said this.
I can try, because we can run the VIN. If I get a copy of the accident report, the VIN should be on it, so I should be able to run the VIN and follow up on that and at least find out if the vehicle's still in commission or, you know, who the last person was that had it.
Yeah.
Like I said, any help that we get anything at Sparks, I'm good with. I just didn't have a whole lot to follow up with other than the fiance's name, and I had no indication from everything I'd read in the case notes and everything. It never even crossed my mind until I talked to you that maybe there was something fishy going on.
Yeah.
I did find it strange that she didn't return my calls, but then she's remarried, so that's in her past. If he's found, then what does she do?
Yeah.
You know, if he's alive and well.
Mm.
So I was kind of going off of that theory. Well, if I was in that position and my fiance had been missing for 8 years and then all of a sudden...
Well, she still got his kid. She still has his kid.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true, too. But, it you know, it would be kind of a tricky situation. Is she involved or does she just not... It's the past. She just doesn't want, you know... And I was looking at it... Actually, I wasn't looking at it with an open mind at the time because I didn't have any indication that she could possibly be involved with this. So it looks like you got plenty of work for me to do now.
Sorry, man.
No, that's all right. No, because, I mean, this is one of them that it's like I felt bad for the family, but it's like, what do I do? I don't have any indication.
Yeah.
Other than we don't have any and haven't had any contact with him, that there's any foul play, but I didn't really have anything to follow up on.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it'll be nice for them to hear that you know, there was stuff being done. You know, it wasn't just being ignored.
Yeah. And actually, I'll probably call Bradley Sr. after I get done with you and let him know that it's sparked some more concerns with me and made it a little bit higher priority than what it was previously.
I am very encouraged by Detective Young's response to all the information and willingness to amp up the investigation. Nathan and I are continuing to follow this, and we hope to get these employment records soon. That could change everything. There is so much that we don't know about this case. I hope to be bringing you a follow-up episode very soon. If you have any information about the disappearance of Bradley Ross, please contact Detective Carrie Young at 260-427-1222. That brings us to the end of episode 47. I would like to thank Crystal, Detective Young, and Patrick for speaking with us for the show. I would also like to thank Nathan for the hours of hard work that he put into this episode. Nathan and I have been working on another project for several months. It is a case that he has been covering for many years. I'm very thankful that he was willing to come on and help me because it has just become way too much work for one person. Oh, and one more person that I would like to thank is Nina from Already Gone. She is the one who suggested that I cover Bradley's case. If you would like to reach me, I am on Twitter at TheVanishPod. There is a Facebook page and a private discussion group. If you have a missing loved one that you would like to have featured on the show, please email me at TheVanishPodcast@gmail.com. The number for the call line is 814-VANISH-9. If you like this show, there are several things that you can do to help me keep making it better. First, subscribe on iTunes or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Give The Vanished a positive review and share the show with your friends. Also, I would like to know a little bit more about you, so please complete a quick survey at wondery.com/survey. I promise it takes less than 3 minutes of your time. If you would like to contribute to the show to help defray some of the production expenses, please visit patreon.com/thevanishpodcast. You can donate as little as $1. A big thank you to all of you who have already done this. Please join me next week. I will be discussing the disappearance of a 22-year-old woman from Kansas.
You know, and that's what's sad, too, is because the interview that we did with the 9 and 10 news station up here in Michigan, the cameraman pulled me aside before they did the interview and asked me if he was a drug addict. And he says, because I don't want to do a story if, you know, he's just some worthless drug addict. I said, are you serious? I said, yes, my brother smoked weed, and yes, my brother drank, but he is not a piece of shit. It still doesn't matter. He's still somebody's son. He's still somebody's, you know, father. He's still somebody's brother. Somebody, you know, they've got family. They all have family. We don't care what people think about our brother, you know, son. It's our family. We want them back, whether they want them to or not.
Brad's cousin that called in and said that she thought she saw Bradley working at the new Starbucks on West Jefferson. At the Starbucks doing construction.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then they followed up with that stuff, and that's when they found that it wasn't, there was a guy that looked like Bradley there, but the supervisor did not know Bradley when shown a picture of him.
Oh, okay.
They talked to a guy named Clovis Lombard that said he'd seen Bradley in River Haven Trailer Park about 4 months ago. This was September of 2006. When they followed up with Clovis, he at first said he didn't even know of Bradley, but then when they showed him a picture, he said he did know Bradley, but it had been months since he'd seen him. Oh, it was years, not months. I told you months before, but Clovis said it had been years since he had seen him. And our records bureau does monthly driver's license and III checks on all of our missings, and there has been no activity whatsoever. So if he'd been arrested or anything, it would have popped up.
Yeah, he was gone.
Yep. They did put his, they got family members' DNA and put it in Name Us.
Okay.
So if there was an unidentified body, you know, it should hit. And there hadn't been anything on that neither. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not any more help.
No, I mean, it's great that, you know, we're able to help connect the dots. Always kind of the goal is, you know, to jog somebody's memory or...
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.